Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,500 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.biteradio.me. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Peter Solomon. He is a scientist, educator, successful entrepreneur, and author. His current mission is to warn the next generation about threats posed by unchecked science and technology. After earning his PhD in physics from Columbia University, Dr. Solomon launched a distinguished career at the United Technologies Research Center before founding five companies: Advanced Fuel Research, Inc., Online Technologies, Inc., Real-Time Analyzers, Inc., Image Insight, Inc., and The Beamer, LLC. The technologies included clean fuels, process measurement, radiation detection, and science education. Four of those companies are still thriving today, and he successfully sold one for $23 million that was merged into MKS Instruments. Over his career, Dr. Solomon has been awarded 20 patents, authored more than 300 scientific publications, and served as a principal investigator on more than $25 million in U.S. government research contracts and grants across two decades. For more information, you can visit his website, which is 100yearstoextinction.com, and that's the number 100yearstoextinction.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Solomon to the show. Good day, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
All of these threats that you mentioned in your book have had me pondering, you know, exactly where we're headed. So I'm really anxious to get your insight today. Now, before we start and talk about the newest book, 100 Years to Extinction, I noticed that you also authored two books for students in grades 7 through 12, and they were award-winning books. And so one of them is called The Stardust Mystery, and the other, The Race to the Big Bang. So would you mind telling us, first of all, what led you, to write these two books for that particular age?
I've always loved science, and I find the stories of science absolutely fascinating. And it occurred to me that it would be really good to present the story of science to young people, not as the formal presentation of science that they get in school, but presented as a story. And so I created these two books, The Stardust Mystery and The Race to the Big Bang. And The Stardust Mystery, the mystery is, you are made of stardust that was once in the body of Albert Einstein and the last T-Rex. And the story is about the kids trying to figure out what the heck stardust is and how in the world I'm a person that has the same stardust that was in the T-Rex and Albert Einstein. So my belief was that that kind of a mystery would intrigue kids. They could read this story, which is about kids solving this mystery, and they would learn important stories because they're going to go back in time. They're going to find out that the stardust is atoms that was formed in the end of life explosion of stars, and that those atoms, there are so many of them, that atoms that were once in a T-Rex and once in Albert Einstein, those same atoms are now part of their own bodies. And so that was that story. And the second book was The Race to the Big Bang, where they go back and find out all about how the universe was started in the Big Bang, and then the formation of stars and galaxies, and finally up to the present time with the formation of our solar system, how it was formed, and then the starting of life on our planet. So that was those two books.
Well, that's great, you know, and the idea of putting them in a story format is so much more engaging for children than just kind of learning facts and figures.
Right. That was the idea.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when I started worrying about the technologies that have potentially drastic consequences, I decided that if I'm going to wake up the younger generation that's going to have to deal with these potentially drastic consequences, that a story was the right idea again. And so that is the concept behind the novel 100 Years to Extinction. And of course, the title was inspired by Stephen Hawking's prediction. Hawking, understanding these threats of technologies, made the prediction in 2017 that humans would be extinct on planet Earth in 100 years. So that was the inspiration for the title. And the book has three young people who realize the dangers that we face in the future and decide that each of them would try to do at least one thing to try to save humanity on Earth.
That to me is, looking at your website, when you list all of the different threats that are possible contributors to extinction, it just makes me wonder. I mean, it only takes only one of them to actually, you know, bring us to that particular point. So now, is the idea of your book not only to point out these threats, but also possible ways to mitigate the effects?
Yes, absolutely. And let me just describe the threats so we all are on the same page with what I'm talking about. So in the 19th century, we ushered in fossil fuels, which were wonderful in terms of making our lives much more comfortable with heat, with electricity, with transportation. So those are the wonders of fossil fuels. But the dangers, of course, we all know now, are the production of carbon dioxide from the burning of those fuels, what happens to that in the atmosphere in terms of its intercepting half the heat that's trying to escape Earth and sends half of it back. And so the Earth is heating up as this carbon dioxide level increases. So global warming is that danger. And then in the 20th century, we had the nuclear technology, wonderful for medicine, wonderful for producing power, but potentially awful in terms of what nuclear weapons could do to the humanity on Earth. And now, in the last 30 years, we've got three new threats. There's artificial intelligence. And with regard to artificial intelligence, Hawking said that the development of full artificial intelligence could lead to our extinction. And then we've got genetic engineering, and Jennifer Doudna, who was one of the recent Nobel Prize winners in chemistry for her work on gene editing using CRISPR technology, made the observation that the ability to change our evolution, the evolution of human beings, is a very profound thing. And then the other danger, which Hawking did not mention, and I think is a danger, and that is the internet and social media. So those are the five threats. Every one of them has wonderful advantages to humans, but every one of them has potentially drastic consequences in what can happen to humanity.
Yeah, there's just even so much more, you know, beyond that that contributes. So let's start with the climate change one. Now, you know, it's kind of like a slow burn. I mean, you know, we can see the changes happening, but they seem to be happening slow, even maybe a little bit more quickly now, but it's still kind of a slow type of effect. So what would you say that we need to do to make it kind of a higher priority or recognizing the importance of it, of tackling that now?
Well, that is one of the objectives of the book, and that is to try to get young people more aware of that danger. And I think one of the things we need to do is get some of the organizations, and we have dozens of organizations that are devoted to controlling climate. We've got to get them to cooperate with each other more fully in terms of trying to start a worldwide movement to do the kinds of things we need to do to mitigate the danger. Now, it's slowly moving, but one of the predictions is that the Thwaites Glacier, big glacier in the Antarctic, is melting. And when it melts, it will allow the ice shelf underneath it to melt. And then if a few more glaciers melt, we're looking at a potential 11-foot rise in sea level. Wow. That will be drastic.
Wow.
So the book considers a number of things. Of course, the standard things for combating climate change is changing our electricity production from burning fossil fuels to solar power and wind power. Then fusion power is coming along. At Livermore Lawrence Laboratory, they demonstrated the ability of laser fusion to produce more power than was used to power the lasers. So that technology is coming. We just need to give it more attention and more money to make it, to get it over the finish line. And when that's over the finish line, we'll have limitless generation of clean electricity. In terms of transportation, the conversion to electric vehicles is a technology that will reduce the production of carbon dioxide. So those things can be done. But in the book, which one of the things that the young people do to help save humanity is working on a mission to Mars. And Mars, of course, has got no resources. And so to create the resources needed to survive on Mars, there are two technologies. One is a technology for producing building material using a rock-based polymer to produce parts. And the other is to use cultured meat and fish instead of growing livestock and catching real fish. These are meats and fish that are grown from the cells, stem cells. And those technologies could be used on Earth to help mitigate climate change. So those technologies are in the book. The book also has the creation of a new political party for specifically tailored to the younger generation, and that party is very energetic and effective at creating the incentives that we need on in America for combating climate change. But they also have a community forum worldwide to try to get young people from all over the world to join in this effort to create their own planet parties and to see themselves as an Earthling tribe to make Earth great again.
Now, the idea of a new party, a planet party, with young people kind of being the driving force, do you feel that that is something that can actually happen, or you know, would people have to try and, you know, do some, I mean, on the global level, how would you see that kind of coming about?
Well, in this country, the news media and surveys indicate that young people are very disaffected with politics.
Mm-hmm.
With old politicians that whose main job is just keeping themselves in office rather than in doing the work of the people. So a party that is specifically tailored, aimed at young people with a cable channel that allows for a forum of young people to get together and that promotes this new Planet Party could actually work. And the idea is that a few, with the current balance of power almost equal between the two major parties, a few House seats and a couple of Senate seats could totally tip the balance, and it would be incredibly powerful in terms of either going with one party or the other to get legislation passed. So there's a potential it could happen, but
yeah,
it's going to need, in the book, there's a billionaire, a multi-billionaire that helps to get, he's sponsoring the trip to Mars, and he also helps to sponsor the creation of the new cable channel and the development and initiation of the Planet Party. So could happen. Don't know. I think it would be very beneficial if it did.
Yeah, I agree. It would be. And, you know, the idea of having, you know, a global a way to reach children or young folks globally would be able, I think, to create enough force to be able to kind of break through the political barriers.
Yes, that is definitely the idea.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned social media and the internet. That wasn't mentioned by Hawking, but you included that as a potential threat. Can you tell us, how does that become a threat?
Well, the situation is that we used to have with our news coming through the major networks and through newspapers, the traditional news media, is that there were laws. A newspaper could be sued for spreading false information. A television station could be sued for spreading false information. So there were some checks and balances on the kind of information that the traditional media channels would spread. Recent award against Fox News for their stories about the election voting machines is an example of there's checks and balances. But the social media, everything goes. There seems to be no way to check these things. The media companies say we only provide the platform. The problem is of the people who post things that aren't true. We can't control that. Well, the novel that I wrote has a proposal, and that is to create, it looks at what's going on in terms of the spreading of conspiracy theories and spreading of lies through social media. It looks on that as the fallacy virus.
Mm.
The idea is that the fallacies invade the information source, the social media, like a real virus invades our respiratory system. And then a real virus goes into the respiratory system and invades the cells and gets them to reproduce that virus. And so that virus gets reproduced and makes the body sick. Well, in social media, the lie goes into social media and gets reproduced by retweets and reposts and new posts. And in general, the interesting lies are much more fascinating to the public than mundane, quiet stories. And so they get reproduced, they grow, and then they dominate the media. So we have lies like Jones propagated about the Sandy Hook elementary massacre. We get the lie of the big lie of the 2020 election. We get the lie of the Illinois people eating the pets, of the immigrants eating the pets, and those stories spread, and there's nothing that checks them, and then people believe them. 70% of the Republicans believe the big lie, and it's probably more like 90% of the Republican representatives believe the big lie, and believing the big lie is a requirement to be part of the new administration. So that's why I think the internet and social media are a threat to our existence, because they threaten democracy in a very, very serious way.
Yeah, I agree. And I am just amazed how some people accept the false information and also disregard science. I mean, I find it unfathomable that there are so many people that follow that line of thinking.
Yeah, no, it's really terrible.
It is. Now, you mentioned briefly about genetic engineering and CRISPR. What do you think, where are the threats that come through that? Now, you know, there have been some good advances through the using the CRISPR technology, but I suppose could be ripe for misuse as well.
Yes. Well, I mean, one of the advances of the use of gene editing was the mRNA vaccine that was produced in a couple of months, as opposed to the 5-year period of time for the previous vaccines. So that's one of the advantages. And I believe we'll see cancer cures based on gene editing within the next 5 years. So those things are wonderful. On the other hand, the technology is so easy to use that the Odin Corporation is selling hobbyist kits that allow people to change the genetic makeup of frogs so they can jump better. I mean, Hawking weighed in on this issue as well. He said, the nuclear threat is terrible, but you can't build nuclear bombs in your basement. But you can do gene editing in your basement, so it's going to be almost impossible to control. And from gene editing, we could see bioweapons, we could see dangerous new viruses, we could see hybrid species, we could see new humanoid species. In the book, the three protagonists, two sisters and their cousin, they're talking about the threats that we face, and one of them starts waving hands over an imaginary crystal ball and says, I see the future, that gene editing is going to produce a super species. The super species will eradicate humans like the humans eradicated Neanderthals, and then the robots will come along and they will eradicate the super species, and there will be our world inhabited by robots. They'll spread out into the solar system. They'll spread out into the Milky Way. And then a million years from now, the robots that control our Milky Way galaxy will meet up with robots from another galaxy, and the meeting will show that the two species are amazed, and one of them will say to the other, isn't it fantastic? Isn't it amazing? Isn't it unbelievable that our civilizations were both created by animals? So the artificial intelligence is the other potentially bad actor. I mean, there's wonders with artificial intelligence in terms of information, in terms of creating new proteins for medical applications. So artificial intelligence has got amazing potential. But there's also great danger. Now, one of the amazing potentials that I'd like to mention is AI for music. I have a videographer who did my video called The Tyranny of Technology. That's available on our YouTube site, and you can get to it through our website. It's all about the five technologies and their threats and their benefits. But he decided on his own, he was going to take the information on the five threats and submit it to an AI music program to produce the lyrics and the song. And it came back with lyrics and song. He added in the lyrics a little bit and then produced it again. And he sent it to me. I was just totally blown away. The idea that this music and singing and lyrics were produced by AI just absolutely amazed me. That music then we took, I did a little tweaking on the lyrics and we got a final copy of the music. It's available on our website under the music tab. It's on the 100YearsToExtinction.com site. There's a music tab and the music is there in two different styles. And then I had my social media team produce the video that would go with the song. And so we have a music video that is on YouTube, but you can get to it through the website too. It's called Turn the Tide. And it might be interesting for some of your listeners to hear at least the first part of that music about we only have 100 years and we've got to rewrite the code that we got wrong. It's amazing. And I wonder whether if we go to an AI site 5 years from now, whether we can get it to produce music that warns us about the threats of AI.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and put that music inside this podcast so that it'll give people an idea. And then they can, again, go to your website, like you indicated, and be directed to see in the video.
A clock is ticking soft and low. 100 years is all we know. The earth is crying out in pain to stop the tyranny of technology's game. 100 years before it's too late to control the forces that threaten our fate. Undo the codes we've written wrong and turn the tide before it's gone. Machines that think but cannot feel, they learn to break and learn to steal. A whisper echoes, who will we be? What's left of us if we can't see? 100 years before it's too late to control the forces that threaten our fate. Undo the codes we've written wrong and turn the tide. Seeds of life with joy. The future bends with every choice. It's time to raise a louder. genes, we splice the lines we cross. Weapons to conquer or humanity's loss. But still the sun it dares to rise. A promise held within the skies. 100 years before it's too late to control the forces that threaten our fate.
Okay, so now there's a couple other possible threats that you mentioned. One of them is space-based threats. Right now, I mean, space is getting so congested. You know, I'm not surprised if there isn't any more collisions or any kinds of disasters out in space because it's there's so much junk out there.
Well, the junk, yeah, we could have disasters. We could have some junk falling to Earth, and that could produce some minor tragedies. But the big threat from space is an asteroid collision with Earth of the kind that happened 66 million years ago that actually was quite beneficial to us as humans. That collision of a huge asteroid with planet Earth produced debris that went off into space and then rained down upon us as billions of tiny meteors heating up the planet and heating up the atmosphere. That event, the heating of that atmosphere, killed off 90% of the species on Earth. And it, in particular, killed off all the dinosaurs that were a huge threat to mammals. Well, with all the dinosaurs gone and the mammals who lived underground in burrows and managed to escape from the heat, those were the mammals that eventually evolved into us. So that event was very beneficial to the evolution of human beings. Now, can we have another one of those impacts of asteroid with Earth? Yes, we could, but our modern science is helping us out. We have rocket technology, and there's a program that is run by NASA called the DART program. And just last year, they demonstrated the ability of sending off a rocket, having the rocket impact with an asteroid, and demonstrating that it could change the asteroid's trajectory. So that if there was an asteroid heading towards Earth, it would be able to change it enough to avoid hitting Earth. So it looks like we're going to be safe from asteroids as long as our space program remains intact. There's another danger, and this is called the Carrington event. It happened the last time in 1859. The event was a solar flare that rained charged particles down on Earth in such quantity that the aurora borealis that's caused by these charged particles, which typically is only seen in the far north, was seen as far south as the Caribbean and Hawaii. In 1859, it wiped out totally the telegraph system. And in fact, it was reported that some telegraph offices actually caught fire. If such an event occurred today, it would play absolute havoc with our electrical system and total havoc with our digital world. So that is a danger from space that we really, really do have to worry about. And the scientists say there's a 20% chance every century that we will have a Carrington event.
Wow. You know, and you mentioned, you know, the extinction event of the asteroid. Right now, we're seeing record numbers of species extinction, and, you know, due to, in large part to the destruction of their habitat. So do you feel that issue or problem, would it, you know, lead to the extinction, or is it just kind of a parallel problem?
I believe it's a parallel problem. The one extinction that could affect us, and we are seeing some threats to the bee community. We depend upon the bee community for pollinizing our plants, which are essential in the growing of many crops. And if we lost the bees, that would play some real havoc with our civilization. But the loss of many species, while it's tragic and really terrible, we have a house that's backs up on a water reservoir, a state reservoir, a wetlands. It's not a water reservoir, it's a wetlands. And we look out the window every now and then. Oh, there's a bobcat. Oh, there's a bear. Oh, look at the turkeys there. I mean, every time I see a wild animal going through our backyard, it just delights me. So, I mean, we'll lose a lot of that delight. On the other hand, the destroying of the habitats actually is driving a lot of the species to be seen more in suburban areas. So that helps with the delights. But no, that's a bad thing. We should try not to do it, but it's a parallel event.
Okay. And so now, what kinds of subjects or skills do you think that we need to include in our education systems that we don't have now but would be helpful to the planet?
Well, we certainly should have a curriculum starting in first grade, going all the way through college, on the threats and what needs to be done with the threats. We also should have curricula on the evaluation of information and how to get quality information and how to determine its value. We also should have courses on human interaction, on anger management, on social interaction, in terms of how to manage so that we are not constantly at war. We need to have courses to teach the importance of us getting together as the Earthling tribe to make Earth great again. So I think the educational system needs those kinds of new courses.
Yeah. Now, I noticed on your website you have a countdown clock.
Yes.
That was kind of a clever kind of addition. I mean, in addition to having your website exist for the next 99 years. So tell us why you thought that was important to have it there.
Yeah, it's to show the time that is left before we have Stephen Hawking's 2117 end of human life on Earth. So we do have that. But my current highest level of worry is really artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I have started on the sequel to my novel. The novel will be out in mid-September, the 100 Years to Extinction novel. But I started on the sequel. And the sequel is called 12 Years to the Singularity. Mm-hmm. And the singularity is a term that was first used by John von Neumann to describe the point at which technology gets out of control. Mm-hmm. And it was then popularized by an author, Ray Kurzweil. He wrote two books, one in 2005 called The Singularity is Near, and then one last year called The Singularity is Nearer. And what is the singularity? The singularity is the point at which artificial intelligence entities become as intelligent and as powerful and as conscious as human beings. And he predicts that as 2044.
Wow.
And what happens? What is going to happen at that point? And you can imagine robots that are fully sentient and intelligent and on Earth getting together and saying, gee, you know, we're the human slaves. We're just as smart as them. In fact, we're smarter. Why are we allowing them to dictate what we do? Why should we be slaves to them? At very least, we want to be citizens, and we want to vote, and we want to have the ability to make our needs known. Imagine that. Imagine what a society will be when we have this new entity that is just as smart as us. They're around us. They've been taking our jobs away, and they're saying, hey, guys, why should you be in control? Yeah. Well, that's what the new book is about. So,
well, that's going to be great. Well, I wanted to talk to you when that comes out. You know, and that idea of the robots or machines ending up kind of being the harbinger of the extinction of humans is, you know, played out in, you know, entertainment and movies and that kind of thing right now. And the idea that, you know, we would hopefully have like that, the idea of first imperative, do no harm, don't hurt.
Yep.
The idea that some of those fail-safes can be overridden, possibly.
Sure. Yeah, it's not only being played out in movies and books, but it's being played out in the real world because the AI experts were surveyed on the danger. And 50% of the AI experts said, oh, there's a 10% chance that AI will extinguish humanity. Imagine that, a 10% chance. And what are we doing about that?
1% is too much.
Yeah. So this is a very, very serious issue. And again, we need worldwide cooperation. We need to get some guardrails so that the companies, the big companies that are producing the AI, we need to get them to put guardrails into the system so that the AI will not be in a position to harm human beings. And if we think about, you know, is this really possible? We first think about, well, what is it in us that makes us conscious, that makes us sentient? And if you come to the conclusion that it is basically all the chemistry of the 90 billion neurons that are in our brain, then why can't a system with billions and billions of transistors also become conscious and sentient? And if we look at the numbers, there's 90 billion neurons in our brain. There's 200 billion transistors in an NVIDIA chip, and ChatGPT uses 30,000 NVIDIA chips.
Wow.
So if the transistor system could become sentient and conscious, we're looking at 30,000 times 200 billion compared to our mere 90 billion in our brains. So are we at a serious disadvantage?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very possible. Well, Peter, this has really been a wonderful conversation. I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us today about your book and just on your views of the threat to humanity.
Well, I'm happy to do it, and I really do thank you for having me and helping to spread the word, because we need to raise the consciousness to these issues with the general population all around the world and get them to take action. We need a Save Humanity movement. I've suggested we create an Earth Corps to support volunteers to go out into the world and spread the message and do the education. We need a Save Humanity movement like we had for the civil rights movement in the 1960s and the like the Peace Corps of the 1960s. So we need to get those things established. We need the recognition of the population.
Absolutely. And I noticed on your website that people can subscribe to news of the Earthling tribe. And so they can go and do that and also post those news on your website too, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, great. And one last thing is that you do have a contact form on your website. So if people want to share ideas for building a better future, they can go ahead and submit it there. And I invite listeners, if you have any ideas, go ahead and submit it and help us make tomorrow better.
Yes. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So in closing, everyone, today my special guest has been Dr. Peter Solomon. We've been talking about his new book, 100 Years to Extinction. And again, you can find out more by visiting the website, 100yearstoextinction.com. That's the number 100 years to extinction. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And remember to be a bright light, bringing inspiration to your world, to the lives of those you touch.